You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 22nd of January, the first of an important five-game stretch does not go the Jazz way. What happened to the defense? A look inside the numbers will reveal something interesting to the night. And what adjustments did the Blazers make? Plus, it's a Time Machine Tuesday. It's all coming up on Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, and geeky numbers. You can tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On Jazz as well. It's also available on Apple, Google, Spotify, all your podcatchers. Thanks very much for tuning in. Tough loss last night for the Jazz. Huge five-game stretch, and the Jazz don't get the first of the five. And this is one they were expected to win. They were a five-point favorite. They have them at home. And one that, you know, if we were going to go hit all the places that we've talked about in this five-game stretch of being the third seed and or the fourth seed, that these are the games that you probably need to try to go get. At least try to get three of the five in the sequence. So now you're going to have to go win one of the upcoming games on the road and try to upend a really good Denver team on Wednesday. So disappointing start to a crucial five-game stretch, though, at the same time. I think you had a great basketball game, 13 ties, 13 lead changes until Portland pulled away. And you had the really, in a lot of ways, what you had was a matchup of two superb coaches. And Terry Stotts eventually, with his expertise, is going to adjust to the things that Quinn Snyder put together and did in that ball game, in the first two ball games. And we saw that in the third and fourth quarter. So super impressive work by the Blazers. A huge win for them. Probably a bigger win for the Blazers than a loss for the Jazz. They had been struggling on the road against Western Conference teams. They all, in the post game, they all talked about how this is a discussion in their group. That people were saying that they were struggling on the road against Western Conference teams. They lost 9 of 12 on the road. Their two wins were in overtime, and they needed to come out and prove that. That was their number one talking point in the third quarter. They did that, slicing the Jazz up for 39 third-quarter points. They were up 10 with about 5 minutes left. Donovan led the Jazz on a flurry late, ended up with 36 points, but the Jazz defense gets beat. So let's dig inside the numbers as we always do. There's an interesting story to tell here a little bit. So the Jazz defense gets sliced apart and allows 39 points in the third quarter and overall for a defensive rating of 108. Last time the Jazz had that bad a night was against Toronto. Prior to that was Philadelphia. Prior to that was the Oklahoma City and San Antonio games in early December. So this was not one of the Jazz better defensive outings of the year. The offense, though, on the other hand, was a 97.5. And so that was really, if you kind of dig into this, that's the detriment, and that's what prevented the Jazz from winning this ballgame. Is as much as the defense did not have its stellar shutdown night, the offense at 97.5 offensive rating is, they were not good against Detroit, and they were not good against, last time they were this bad was against Philadelphia. It was the 37th. Best offensive performance of the night against for Utah. They've been, in this last stretch, we haven't played great teams. We've been average. Now we played a pretty good team, and they got us. What's interesting to me about the defensive performance, it was not Utah stellar, but they did hold Portland below their average, just a point below their average. And so, you know, when we talk about the Jazz defense as of late, it's been about 10 points below, holding teams about 10 points below their average. And that's when the Jazz have been at their best. You start to do a little run here of the Portland Trailblazers, and in their previous 10 games, which was not a, since December 30th, their average was a 116.1 offensive rating. They've been on fire offensively, fourth best offensive team in the league. and the Jazz held them to a 108.3. What jumps out to me here, and when I said in the opening tease that I thought something in the numbers would be interesting, as the Jazz defense in our mind wasn't as dominant as it has been, didn't hold them under a point per possession, yet held them 8 points below their average for the last 10. Because Portland's offense is rolling. Now, they've been at home for most of those. But that, to me, means that the defense, while not great, and Portland certainly made adjustments, and they allowed 39 points in the third quarter, I'm not sure what we truly are asking out of the defense. And they held them to 8 points below their average. Maybe they could have done, I think they could have had a little bit better, but it wasn't as bad a defensive night as it felt as the time when you dug into the numbers. Now, the offense for the Jazz was really not good. 97.5 is just not going to win you very many games. You drop under 100, it's hard to win, and you drop under 100 against a good offensive team, you're not going to win. How did it happen? If we look at the Jazz shooting stats, uncontested shots, they got 50 uncontested shots and went 20 of 50 last night. Donovan, 5 of 15. Joe Ingles, 1 of 5. Jay Crowder, 5 of 12, which is actually not so bad at 42%. So the Jazz got 50 uncontested looks. Second Spectrum data, which looks at the QSQ shot quality, the Jazz actually had a little bit better shot quality than Portland last night, but were a minus 8 below what an average team would have shot. So really an incredibly poor night for the Jazz shooting last night. And that came back to haunt them. The Jazz had been shooting it fairly well recently, but not anything outrageous. So it wasn't as though this was Jazz haven't had an over 40% game from 3-point line since prior to, I think, the Cleveland game in Cleveland. So it wasn't as though this was coming back to roost or anything like that you had to expect this to happen. They had a bad shooting night. They didn't make shots. Portland's defense evidently give them some credit, had an impact along the way. And I think the offense last night got caught. Nurkic dropping back. And when Nurkic drops back, they were able, particularly when Donovan was at the point guard, they were able to get the Jazz to play in a manner in which they stopped moving the basketball. The Jazz drove on the left, particularly on the left side of the floor. They were weaking Donovan to his left hand. He would drive to the left side of the floor. Nurkic would drop back. They couldn't get the ball up to the lob for Rudy. And they were holding on the three-point shooters, not letting Ingles or Korver get looks. And then the Jazz had a really hard time offensively being able to get the looks that they wanted to get in that game. When Kyle was on the floor, the offense really, really stagnated and had a hard time. They just couldn't get Kyle going. And last night, those numbers jumped out a little bit. And it was a tough matchup. They threw Evan Turner at Kyle, and so now Kyle has to guard a bigger guy who just goes into the post and kind of backs them down. Though while Evan Turner was on the floor, overall, Portland's offense wasn't great. Portland game was tied in the fourth quarter, and then their bench, 2 threes by Leonard, and the Jazz opened up the fourth quarter just not making shots, kind of lack of ball movement, weren't able to penetrate, get the ball swinging around, whereas the Blazers did. The Blazers had 30 assists last night, and the Jazz turned the ball over a decent amount last night against a team that doesn't traditionally force turnovers. I think they actually ended with 15, which is not a huge number, but Portland doesn't force turnovers. Ricky had 4 of them in his 13 minutes. You could see him trying to make plays that didn't look comfortable. Ricky was +1 in his 14 minutes back last night. But a third quarter adjustment really changed the game. We'll dig into that a little bit. We'll look at the offense with Donovan at the point guard and what's happening there. Some of the adjustments by Portland as well. That's all coming up. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai. And they've got the new year, new ride program going on. You can save money in 2019, $6,000 off the remaining 2018 Value Edition Elantras. And of course, Anytime you get a Hyundai, that comes with America's best warranty, the 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and Hyundai Assurance. Also, another additional $500 off select models. Bunch of fun deals going on in the new year with all the snow falling. Two free ski passes when you purchase a new vehicle. Murdoch is in your home for affordable winter, is your home for affordable winter-ready vehicles. We're driving the Santa Fe's in our house. I've got the new one that I'm driving right now. My son's driving last year's model. It's been fabulous. It is the go-to snow car in the house right now. With all this new snow, feeling comfortable relatively with a 16-year-old driving it in some tough winter conditions, not because of the car, only because of the driver's the relative part. The Kona is the quick, speedy little SUV that's similar to the Subaru Crosstrek. Just fabulous car. Check them all out at MurdochHyundai.com. Murdoch Hyundai in Logan, Linden, and in Murray. Today's show is also brought to you by Slow the Flow. You can slow the flow in Utah by doing all sorts of great things to help our environment. And let me make sure that you know exactly what to do, because we want you to get a, as Slow the Flow people like to say, a good WER, water efficiency rating. What is a water efficiency rating? Well, actually, it's something we totally made up so that you would listen to this ad and makes you think it's really cool to be water efficient. But it's really important for our great state that you do that. So, did you know by installing a low-flow toilet, you can save 0.3 gallons per flush, which doesn't sound like a lot, but flushes add up. How about showering? If you can keep your shower at under 5 minutes, you'll go from using about 12 to 25 gallons. If you used a full tub, it's 70 gallons, then if you shorten that shower a little bit, you save a good deal as well. Little by little, small changes like that can help your WER All-Star ratings. And if you keep it up, it wouldn't be surprised if Slow the Flow, like, puts you into the WER Hall of Fame. Well, okay, probably not. But nonetheless, it's important that we're good to our state and take care of our environment. We live in a desert. Water is a limited resource. So Slow the Flow, save H2O. The game changed last night on Yusuf Nurkic, and he has been great. He was 2 of 9 at halftime. He had been 5 of 9 in the first game, 3 of 10 in the second game. He had 10 points, 10 rebounds game 1. Christmas Day, he had 7 points, 10 rebounds, didn't look interested. And he has been so greatly improved in January. 57% shooting, 46% for the field, and he just came out and dominated the third quarter. He scored 17 points. They lifted him a little bit, had him distribute the offense, and then had him roll on the pick and roll. And with Gobert, what the Jazz had done to deal with Lillard is play Gobert up higher on the pick and roll. The Jazz traditionally, Gobert dropped all the way down, and then you've had those nights where Lillard has those mammoth nights against the Jazz. And when Gobert drops, what they would do is they would set that pick really high. Lillard would come off the pick, you can't go under because Lillard nails it, so you're going over and trailing. Lillard works himself into the mid-range, gets a great look, goes off as mammoth days against the Jazz. The Jazz got beat early in the year by a bunch of guards doing this, so they've adjusted and brought Gobert in his length playing up a little bit higher. In the sense of Lillard's two games against the Jazz, 16 of 37, 19 points a game. You know, that's not something where he was particularly good against the Jazz. C.J. McCollum had not been good either. He was 9 of 29. So it had really worked very, very well. And if you look at how Lillard got his shots last night, if you watch the game, he went to the baseline, got some fadeaways, moved away from Gobert to get those shots. But the impact that the Portland adjusted by having Gobert up a little higher, they ran a bunch of loops and a bunch of curls and a bunch of back cuts and got guys to the rim. And then in addition to that, they got Nurkic rolling to the basket. And on the backside, guys supposed to come in. Well, a lot of times they spaced their guys correctly. So it was Korver who wasn't able to have a defensive impact on that. That's not Kyle's strength. And they were able to get Nurkic rolling to the basket, and he just had a mammoth quarter. Plus, he's such a good passer at the top, coming off that triple-double against Cleveland, having the 5x5 against Sacramento. Last night, he had a 5x4 with 22 points, 8 rebounds, 7 assists, 6 blocks. He did have 5 turnovers, and he had just a tremendous impact on the game in the third quarter. And so, you know, what you really – I mentioned earlier, you had a great basketball game with awesome coaching. you know, Quinn's made a bunch of adjustments with the Jazz defense to make it great and be what it has been. Terry Stotts, one of the better offensive coaches in the league, and these coaches are just great. It's why when you are not a good coach in this league, you get exposed so fast. And the elite-level coaching showed last night that Portland, after the Jazz blasted them twice in the last 30 days, came with an adjustment and particularly got it rolling in the third quarter, and the Jazz were just flustered. Portland shot 15 of 22 in that quarter. In the first half, the Jazz only allowed Portland 5 3-point attempts in the entire half and really had Portland uncomfortable offensively. They scored 15 second quarter points. The Jazz defensive rating was down in the low 90s. Everything was working, and Portland just came out. Two things Portland came out with. Incredible aggressiveness to open the third quarter, as you'd expect from that good a team and that with those kind of leaders. And then two, they just made some offensive adjustments, got some things moving. The other one that was interesting was the lineup they closed with. So this team has often been Nurkic, Lillard, McCollum, Harkless, and Aminu. They closed last night with Evan Turner and Jake Lehman. Lehman's really become a nice player for them. There's some concerns listening to Locked On Blazers with Jason Quick and Eric Garcia Gunderson of whether or not he's going to be able to play in the in the playoffs, because he's a little bit of a defensive liability and people will zero in on him. But he and Myers Leonard were the key of the game. Lehman was a plus 14. Leonard in that opening fourth quarter hit those two threes, and if he gets space, he is a knockdown shooter. He was plus 11 and able to stretch the floor in that sequence as well. So really, you had the Jazz kind of, as I said, they disrupted Portland's offense if you held them about 8 points below what they were doing. But then Portland made adjustments at the half that were able to answer the bell and get good looks at the rim, get some opportunities that the Jazz don't usually give up. And that's a credit to a really good point guard in Damian Lillard and a really good coach in Terry Stotts, who've worked together for a long time. Stotts, talking about Lillard and the pick and roll before the game, we were talking about how Lillard is so good no matter who the big is. And Stotts is just like, he's just run a ton. Last year he ran 3,000 pick and rolls. So about 2,800. Call it 3,000. If that's the case, in 7 years, the guys run like 21,000 pick and rolls. Well, then he's got a pretty good idea of what you're throwing at him. But if you look last night, I mean, back to my point, I just pulled up Cleaning the Glass to look at shot distribution. The Blazers' offense last night was in the 45th percentile of all offensive performances. So 108.5. The Jazz shooting was in the 7th percentile. It's not great. Jazz defense last night, Portland got 41% of their shots at the rim. That's unusual. The Jazz are one of the better teams in the league at denying shots at the rim. Portland was able to get to the rim and then completed a decent, about league average, 22 of 35 at the rim. Otherwise, the Jazz defense did a lot of great things. Didn't allow a corner three all night, only allowed 18 three attempts, forced them into 41% of their shots as mid-range shots. They hit 40%, which is right on league average. It was the ability to get the amount of shots they got at the rim that changed the game. The Jazz, on the other hand, got the same amount of shots at the rim, didn't finish great, just 57%. Took a little bit more mid-range shots than they – actually, they did a pretty good job. They only took 24% of their shots as mid-range. So last night, the Jazz, 44% at the rim, 32% from three. You'd like a little bit more threes there, but 76% is a pretty good number. You'd like to move that up a tiny bit, but it's a pretty darn good number. They just didn't hit 5 of 23 on above-the-break threes, and a lot of that comes down to Ingles and Korver, who I, you know, would think that is part of the game plan, give credit, but Joe, 0 of 3, Korver, 0 of 5, you know, those two guys, 0 of 8, that's a pretty vital three-point shooting. Donovan's going to go 2 of 8. He's going to go 2 of 8, 3 of 8, that's kind of his range. But Ingles, 0 of 3, Korver, 0 of 5, that's unusual, and that, you know, when Kyle gets two threes, we win, and when he doesn't, we haven't since he's joined the team. He's pretty much a bellwether. Ingles, by the way, this has been going on for a while. I don't, you know, one of his legs are just spent, or if he's just off a little bit. He's about 15 of 68 on above the break threes, 22%. Corner three is deadly at 51%, but his above the break three is kind of this is where he was as a shooter 3 years ago, and it's kind of slipped in that regard. So hopefully that's not a reoccurring trend. But this was a tough one. You want to win this game. You got this five-game stretch, and they didn't shoot it well, and that ends up costing them the ballgame. We'll play Time Machine Tuesday. I want to make sure I got all my little notes. I had taken a ton of notes down, so let me just take a quick run through. Portland bench, Turner Korver. Offense with Donovan. I'll touch on that when we come back in a second. We touched on the adjustments, got him 65 second half points. And I want to look and see if Joe Ingles is open or not. We'll do that tomorrow. Today's show is brought to you in part by Homie. It's pretty interesting. Real estate market has been the same for a long, long time. When houses were $150,000, $250,000, $300,000, the way it worked is you got a real estate agent, you gave him a commission, and you moved on. Houses have gotten more expensive. Nothing about the commission structure has changed. That's where Homie comes in. Homie is going to use technology, a team approach, and help you list and sell your home while avoiding high fees or commissions. It's kind of revolutionizing the whole system. Is it right that if you do a big remodel of your house and all of a sudden your house is worth a lot more, that the real estate agent gets more for that? Is it right that you bought a house in the right marketplace and the market goes up and now the real estate agent gets more? Homie says no. So for the same low cost, you list at $199, and when you close, it's $1,299. The average Homie customer saves over $10,000 when they sell a house. Ask yourself why the system is what it is, and if you can't come up with a good answer, then maybe Homie is there. Homie is selling houses faster than the overall market and individual agents. You not only save thousands, but they help you sell your home fast by putting your home on the MLS, other major websites, including Facebook. It's a team approach, unlike a traditional agent. Homie will give you a whole team of Utah licensed agents and attorneys to help you buy and sell your home. Call 801-899-0072. That's 801-899-0072. Again, that's 801-899-0072. There's a lot of talk led by me about the offense with Donovan at the point. It has not been as good. It was not as good last night. My general thesis has been that it's been good for Donovan to have the ball in his hands, maybe not great for the team. Let's walk through a few notes here. With Donovan, the point guard, Rubio, Neto, and Exum off, the team has been terrific. They're plus 8.4. They have largely been terrific because the defense has been out of this world. They're in the 99th percentile at 97.5. Defensively, they're at the 99th percentile in defending. They're in the 99th percentile in offensive rebound. They're in the 91st percentile of not fouling. They are great defensively. Offensively, they are shooting very, very poorly. So poorly that I'm almost wondering whether the limited sample size of 489 possessions is not a great sample to make a value judgment on this. It is factual right now that the team is great, Donovan's numbers are fabulous, but the offense of the team is poor when Donovan's been at the point guard. Now, a deeper dive, and you see that the Jazz effective field goal percentage when Donovan's been at the point is 48.7, which is the 8th percentile of all shooting. The points per possession is in the 26th percentile. Now, 106 of those minutes are when Favors and Gobert are on the floor together, and that group struggles. We have a hard time scoring when Favors and Gobert are on the floor together. When Crowder comes in, it gets better. It gets really good. It gets great, actually. It's a 36.6 plus. The offensive rating jumps to 122. It's only 94 possessions. But just that single difference with Donovan the point guard, when you take Favors out, the offense goes from a 103.8 to a 122.3. All right, that's pretty telling. Now, the other lineups don't, when Korver's in with Donovan, don't seem to work, interestingly. 96, 100, 177 offensive ratings. So for whatever weird reason, Donovan and Korver together has not worked yet. Defensively, it's been generally fine. To make an overall value judgment, as I have stated at times, and maybe overly so, I think you have just some unnaturally bad shooting. So when Donovan is at the point guard, and those three guys are off right now, we're shooting 32% from three. That's pretty low. We're getting a good amount of threes. We're getting 38% of our shots. We're getting 38% of our shots at the rim. That's a 76. That's good. Our shot distribution's good. We're just not making shots. We're not making mid-range shots. We're at 34.6%. And we're not making non-corner threes. We're at 29%. And some of that is unnaturally low. Which leads me to believe those numbers can come up a little bit. It is factual right now that the team is great when Donovan is at the point. The offense is not, and Donovan is great. It is also factual that there seems to be a pretty big discrepancy of whether he's playing with Favors and Gobert and whether he's playing with just Crowder. And so it probably needs more data and more time to be able to figure out and how to make that decision. Donovan's flurry late was great. I mean, he was terrific. Trying to bring the team back. All right. We'll look into Joe Ingles tomorrow. Let's play Time Machine Tuesday. Let me pull into my bag. Ooh, 1992. So 27 years ago, the 91-92 season for the Utah Jazz. We'll scan down. Oop. Somehow I just ended up with Andre Karolinko's team page, which is a really weird page. 91-92. We go look and see what were the Jazz doing. And this year, the Jazz went 55-27. They won the Midwest. And they would lose to the Portland Trailblazers in the finals. Let's see what we're doing. We beat the Clippers and the Sonics in the playoffs. On January 21st or 22nd, we played the San Antonio Spurs at home. We came in on a three-game win streak. We were 26-25-25, and we would win 100-99. Oh, great game. Spurs started Rod Strickland, Willie Anderson, Terry Cummings, Sean Elliott, and David Robinson. Big Dog was on the Spurs then. Jazz started John Stockton, Jeff Malone, Blue Edwards, Karl Malone, and Mark Eaton. Mailman had 23-17. Stockton had 15-19 and just two turnovers. Stockton shot 3 of 12. Blue Edwards went 8 of 16. Jazz went 3 of 12 from 3 that night. Mark Eaton played 25 minutes. Mike Brown came off the bench for 25 minutes, gave the Jazz a big 16 points. Play the center. Tyrone Corbin, a solid 25 minutes off the bench. Delaney Rudd and David Benoit in the nine-man rotation. The Jazz would outscore the Spurs 100-98 and win it. Excuse me, outscore them 29-25 in the fourth. Let's go see if there was a buzzer beater. See if I can find any little fun note on the internet and see if I can find any random note of anything. I think Larry Brown, was that before the, is Larry Brown the head coach then? It's a big headline. One way or another, Brown out with Spurs from Scott Howard Cooper. Written on January 22nd of 1992. What a weird story. I don't remember this at all. Larry Brown supposedly fired and then rehired as coach of the Spurs within hours Monday. I was still in college, I guess. Was fired for good Tuesday. Brown was given the option of quitting, said he would not resign, but after skipping a scheduled morning meeting with Spurs management, including Red Combs, he asked to be fired. So the Spurs claim Brown and his agent Joe Glass maintained Brown was canned, plain and simple. In other words, you're trying to get money. Even for Brown, he had seemingly bought instability to an art form during his 20 seasons as a coach. The Spurs own $3.5 million. Bob Bass, the team's vice president, replaced Brown on an interim basis Tuesday night. McCombs said at a news conference, the current assistant, Greg Popovich, the coach at Pomona Pitcher for 8 years before leaving to join Brown staff, will be considered during the summer for a permanent post. Bob Bass said, I thought Brown would stay on as late as 10 o'clock Tuesday morning. I never thought Larry would not be here today. How weird. What a crazy story. I don't remember this at all. Brown, in an interview with the San Antonio News Express, said, I'm kind of confused by it. I met with Red, and I thought I was terminated. He didn't flat out say it. He said he thought he had to make a change. So I told Pop and RC Buford, who was an assistant, I thought we had been fired. I did not ask to be terminated. I was terminated, but the bottom line, again, is I felt after the meeting with Red that the man did not want me around. I don't remember this at all. I mean, again, I was in college, so. That night, McCombs arrived at the Hemisphere Arena to learn the lengthy clear-the-air session by players and coaches and began to have second thoughts about firing Brown. Gosh, what a story this would have been. By late Monday afternoon, McCombs went so far to tell the San Antonio Light that Brown's job was not in jeopardy. That night, Brown decided he was staying. David Robinson, Terry Cummings, Sean Elliott, three of the most influential players, reported calling the coach to ask him to stay, even though Robinson has said several times he has a communication problem with Brown. In the end, Brown was gone. All three assistants were retained. Bass had a new title and two job responsibilities, and the Jazz would beat the Spurs on that night, January 22nd, 1992. Wild. How fun. Time Machine Tuesday. Have a great one. That is Locked On Jazz, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.